Governor Jay Inslee is addressing the state from Olympia. We go now live.
A fatality in our state. As of Sunday, we've had 195 of our fellow Washingtonians fall, and we have 5,000 or more known cases, with many, many thousands more than that that have yet to be diagnosed. Since I announced Washington's stay home, stay healthy order for the state, we have seen social distancing and other compliance measures from our businesses, from our churches, from our families, from people across the state of Washington who are really pitching in to keep us all healthy. It's been very gratifying to see the vast majority of Washingtonians voluntarily comply with this order. So we have a very strong and robust team across the state of Washington, and this team is dedicated to beating the COVID-19 virus. And today we'd like to talk about the ability and need to grow that team and recruit new members to that team against the COVID-19 virus, because if we're going to beat it, all of us have to be engaged. All of us have to be leaders, because the more people that are leaders, the less people who are going to be victims. And so that's why we're here today. Unfortunately, we've had thousands of calls coming in from many places in the state, also to our state and local agencies, from concerned residents, with reports that some individuals and some businesses are not complying with this order. And these people who are calling us are very concerned about their health and the health of others, and how the actions of folks who aren't on the team are putting so many people at risk. My office and state agencies have worked day and night to try to give as much guidance as humanly possible to individuals and businesses about how to comply with this order. And now, working with state and regulatory agencies, prosecutors, and law enforcement, we are providing clear guidance on how to report violations of this order of compliance so that everyone can help everyone be on this team. And that's why I'm pleased today to be joined by Attorney General Bob Ferguson, Chief John Batiste, the Washington State Patrol, Bellevue Police Chief Steve Milette, and Spokane Police Chief Craig Meidel. Together, we are announcing today how these orders will be enforced and how individual Washingtonians can help. Now, our focus remains on educating the public while these orders remain in effect. And we don't know how long that's going to be. And I've previously said that these orders might have to be extended, and that certainly remains the case given the continued growth of this virus in our state. So the essentials of this guidance we're talking about today might be thought of in three tiers. The first tier: if state or local authorities receive a complaint from a citizen, they're going to let people know that if they are violating the order, they really need to stop violating the order and comply with what is healthy for everyone in Washington. The second tier: if they don't come into compliance, the state is going to take action, starting with citations, suspension notices of a variety of permits, including revoking business licenses if that's what's necessary to bring these folks into compliance. The third tier: if that is still not enough, but local and state authorities are going to refer these complaints to the Attorney General for law enforcement, either for civil or criminal charges. We know that violating orders can amount to a gross misdemeanor. But taking the people to court is the very last thing that will be considered and should not be necessary under any conditions for folks who really value the health of their loved ones and respect for everyone in our community. So if you believe a business is violating this order, we have a one-stop online form to submit your complaint so we can investigate it. And that's at coronavirus.wa, that's WA.gov, G-O-V, coronavirus.wa.gov. So if you see gatherings that are in violation of this order, we'd like you to use your best judgment and decide whether to notify local law enforcement or this a site that we've set up. And you should find the direct line to your police department. Please do not call 911. That's for emergencies, unless there's an immediate threat to safety. And I do like to stress this. These are local decisions, and we're not going to tell local law enforcement how to do their jobs. We think the best way to help is to provide information and let the local law enforcement agencies make their decision. And I want to thank local leaders around the state for stepping up to the threat this virus poses. The emergency responders, the police and fire, who do not fear going in to help people in unknown situations, we know they're heroes every day, as are our nurses and physicians and ambulance drivers. These folks deserve our help, and our help is to not violate this order. You know, we have people risking their health going into these hospitals today to treat people with COVID. And if they can do that, the least we can do is to follow the law of the state of Washington in this order to preserve human life of our neighbors and our families. Regularly updated information for businesses and individuals about our stay home, stay healthy order can be found again at coronavirus.wa.gov. So I'm now going to turn it over to Bob Ferguson, who's done such a fantastic job for the state of Washington.
Thank you so much, Governor. And thanks to you and your team, who I know are working so hard on behalf of all Washingtonians to keep everybody safe. It's an honor to be here today. Just to reinforce a few of the key points that the governor made and the role of the Office Attorney General working with local law enforcement on this really important issue. Look, we're all in this together, and my office is working closely with state agencies and local law enforcement to ensure that the governor's emergency proclamation and orders are followed. Our goal is 100% voluntary compliance. We want to be very clear. I don't want to have to use the powers of my office to hold accountable those who intentionally violate the governor's emergency orders. But I want to be very clear. If necessary, I will. The reason is simple. Lives literally depend upon it. A couple points I want to add on that. A non-essential business that refuses to close even after, as the governor mentioned, even after a warning letter, that first step, is endangering public health and committing an unfair labor practice and violating our Consumer Protection Act's prohibition on unfair business practices. We ask you to think about our healthcare professionals who are risking their lives every day on our behalves and the high-risk individuals in our communities. We really appreciate everybody enforcing these orders so we do not have to use those enforcement powers. I do want to add one specific point around something we've received a number of complaints about very specifically, and that is the governor's March 18th emergency 30-day moratorium on evictions. During this emergency, of course, it is critically important that Washingtonians maintain safe and stable housing. My office has received complaints that landlords are attempting to evict tenants in violation of the governor's moratorium. We have, to be specific, received reports that landlords are getting creative in trying to work around that moratorium. We take these allegations very seriously. If a Washingtonian feels that is happening to them, please contact my office. We understand these are tough times for everybody, including landlords. However, putting families on the street during this public health emergency is not right and is certainly not healthy for everyone concerned. We appreciate everybody's compliance, and I really appreciate the hard work of local law enforcement folks, some who are on the call, who are really helping on this as well. Next, I want to introduce Chief Batiste of the State Troopers, who's been a true partner and also is going through a tough time as an agency. They lost one of their own recently, and Chief, just really appreciate your service and those of all those who work with you. Thanks so much.
You're listening to 97.3 Cairo FM. You've just heard from Governor Jay Inslee and Attorney General Bob Ferguson. The president just stepped up to his microphone about 1 minute ago. We'll take you to the White House live. Before I switch over to that, let me just tell you, reset. What Jay Inslee just announced is that they are going to have three tiers. They've set up a hotline online so you can report people who are gathering in defiance of the shelter in place. And the first tier is they will contact the violators and tell them to knock it off. Tier two, they will write citations. So a ticket, essentially, if you're in violation of sheltering at home. And then the third tier is they would bring in the court system and file either civil or criminal charges against anybody who is in violation in our state. So that was just announced live. You heard it here on Cairo Radio, the governor and the attorney general. And the AG was, and let me say something very quick, because the president has just handed off to his health and human services secretary, and we'll take you to the White House when the president is speaking again. But some of the people at the governor's press conference, John Batiste, the chief of the Washington State Patrol, good man. Chief Milet of the Bellevue PD, good man. I'm glad that law enforcement is part of all of this. Bob Ferguson, there have been many times in the past where I've perceived that he enforces laws based on the ideology of the person he's going after. But the fact that law enforcement, I think law enforcement, especially people like John Batiste and Chief Milet, I feel much better that law enforcement, because I guarantee you our cops don't want to contact somebody who might have COVID-19. There are too many cops already who have been infected. There are too many cops who are worried that their next encounter could be the one that gives them COVID-19. And so the police, I trust, are not going to be too heavy-handed in the enforcement of this new three-tier system. So they announced at coronavirus.wa.gov, you can report if you know somebody who's got a restaurant or bar or any other type of business, and there are people gathering at that business, then they will go in and warn them, write them a ticket, and eventually civil or criminal charges. Okay, the word coming out of the White House now is that 1 million Americans have been tested for COVID-19. They're trying to ramp up the ability to test us. You've heard all the news out of Olympia. Let's take you. This is Alex Azar. He's about to hand it back to the president any moment. He's the Health and Human Services Secretary, and we can find out what's going on, not just in our Washington, but in the other Washington as well. So now we take you to the White House in the Coronavirus Task Force briefing live here on Cairo Radio.
30 million tablets from Sandoz and 1 million tablets from Bayer of hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, which are potential COVID-19 treatments. And we authorized Battelle's new decontamination machines, which can each sterilize thousands of essential N95 masks for reuse every day. So thank you, Mr. President, for your leadership, and thank you to everybody who's played a part in getting us where we are today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'd like to ask Dr. Hahn to come up, FDA, because we have some really good stuff. First of all, the numbers have been incredible on testing, but in the days ahead, we're going to go even faster, and we have something from Abbott Labs, which is right here, and that's a five-minute test. Highly accurate, and I maybe can show that as we listen to our FDA commissioner, the job he's done, and the approval process. We talked about the chloroquine and the hydroxychloroquine just now. I thought that I'd mention it, but Alex has already done that, but we have that now under test with 1,100 people in New York, and it was only the fast approval by FDA that allowed us to do that. It was a really rapid approval. And doctor, please say a few words. And this is the first one on the line of the five-minute test from Abbott.
There's a tough juggling act, my friends, because the five-minute test would be a huge breakthrough. But they are now taking questions in Olympia, and I do want to give priority to the local story. And we go back to Olympia, where Jay Inslee is taking questions from the assembled press corps.
We have extensive data about the hospitalizations on a daily basis of COVID-like hospitalizations. We have extensive data on traffic to indicate as a proxy how many interactions people are having. And obviously, we have the infection globally in the state and in our fatality rate. So we look at those things on a daily basis and try to make decisions based on that data rather than some doctrinaire approach. So we have not made a firm decision on this as to what will be the next steps after this two-week period. But I can tell you from the data we have today, it is very highly likely that there will be some further measures that are associated with stay home, stay healthy. And the reason for that is that while we may have had some success in some parts of our state, to some degree, a modest degree, bending the curve down of the rate of acceleration of the virus, we have some disturbing news in other places in the state. We just looked at yesterday's percentage of tests that were positive for COVID-19, and there's some very disturbing numbers in that. I'll just mention some of them. In Skagit County, 21% of all the tests came back positive for COVID-19 yesterday or the day before yesterday. In Adams County, it was 19%. In Island County, it was 17%. In Benton County, it was 16%. In Franklin, it was 15%. These numbers are 2 to 3 times higher than what we've experienced in the week or two before. So it is very alarming to us, frankly, and indicates that we have to refocus our attention, redouble our efforts, and stay on top of this effort. So we don't know what the duration, if that decision was made. Now, that decision has not been made yet, but if that decision is made, we will look at the data. We will listen to the epidemiologists. We'll talk to the world's experts, decide what might be necessary. But I do believe we need to do what's necessary so that we can get ahead of this and not have this drag on for years. So that's how we will be thinking about this issue.
Governor, we're talking about mainly cracking down on businesses rather than having officers driving around and arresting people out on the street in their cars, that kind of thing.
I think the question is, why are we focusing on businesses rather than stopping cars? Well, it's still legal to drive a car in the state of Washington. And so there's not a reason for pulling over drivers. There is a reason for pulling over people who, might be want to sell hot tubs and aren't necessarily an essential business. And for those businesses that are not essential, it is illegal to be in operation right now to endanger human health. And that's where we can take action. But I will comment on this issue of driving. While we've had some success in reducing what you might think of non-essential trips, we do not believe that we've had as much compliance on that as we need. We think we might have reduced the trips by perhaps 50%, and that's a round number. We haven't done the full analysis yet. And we need more people to really stay home and not go out when it's not necessary. And frankly, there's just too many folks still doing that. And we need people to make individual decisions. One of the things I said the other day, and I actually believe it, maybe not a bad idea to tape a photograph of a nurse who puts his or her life in jeopardy when they go into these environments sometimes on the dashboard of your car and really say, is this trip really necessary? Because when you do go out, to some degree, you're exposing yourself either as a transmitter or a potential victim. So we will be looking at those numbers in the upcoming days to decide what is the next step.
Governor, you mentioned that the state's gotten thousands of calls of people alleging that people and businesses aren't violating those orders. Can you give some more detail on what sort of calls you're getting? Is it particular types of businesses? Is it particular parts around the state?
I can't give you that, Joe. If there's any summary of it, I'll try to provide it to you. I don't have particular information about that. I'll try to send you any information that we can. I'll get that to you.
Now we're going to
go to Jim with the News Tribune. I just have a question for the Attorney General, which is you had mentioned the landlords getting creative. I was wondering if you could also quantify that and how they're getting creative and what the state would do if you know, individual tenants are at risk of being evicted?
Sure. I think I can most easily answer the second part of your question, if that's okay. And that is, if someone is being evicted or faces the potential for eviction in a way that violates the governor's order, then yes, we are looking at those very seriously. We'd be contacting the landlord, of course, and doing what we can to assist the individual in that situation. So to be clear, we cannot have folks being evicted while this moratorium's in place. That's bad for everybody's health, reinforcing the governor's points already, and putting them in a challenging situation, to put it mildly. So in terms of what we've seen, there has been, you know, my team has mentioned, as I mentioned, some creative ways, trying to essentially change the terms of the agreement, adding certain charges, which if not paid in a certain way, hey, it's not for lack of paying the rent, for example, maybe something else, okay, that they're getting after. And look, we want to be clear, the intent of the governor's proclamation is going to be enforced. We think this is critically important. We encourage Washingtonians to continue writing to my office, and we can assure them if they write to our office, we'll be following up on all those complaints and making sure that the letter and the intent of the governor's order and moratorium is enforced. Thanks for that question.
Now we're going to go to Austin Jenkins with Northwest News Network.
Governor, this is Austin Jenkins. Two questions. What, beyond the stay home, stay healthy order, can you tell the public about how long this lack of normalcy might last? Are schools going to be out for the rest of the year? Are we looking to midsummer at the earliest to maybe start to feel some sense of normalcy? And then can you also tell us how Bill Gates and Elon Musk might be able to help the state and what you talked to President Joe Biden about last week?
Yes. First off, I would very much like to be able to tell Washingtonians when we will have defeated this virus and when we can restore our games and our schools and everything else. I cannot do that. No one can do that today, at least if you're exercising decision-making based on data, because the data continues to come in and change over the days. As I've indicated, in the last few days, there has been some additional data come in that is not as confidence building as we would like. So as much as I would like to tell you that, that is in the realm of knowing this. We're going to make good decisions. We're going to make a decision to return to normal when it's healthy to return to normal. And when we've done enough, so we've either eliminated or, as to the extent possible, the prospects of this virus coming back. And the debate is going to be, as we go forward on this with some of our stay home, stay healthy initiatives, is when do we get to the point where we make sure it doesn't come back? And that would be unacceptable to us to win a victory in the second half and then lose in the second half, or win a victory in the first half and then lose in the second half. So all of those decisions will be made when we have the data to give us confidence in making those decisions. And I want to tell people that I have an understanding of the uncertainty and how difficult that is in our lives. I have three grandchildren in public school. They want to know when they're going back, as does their mother and father. Certainly the small businesses that have been impacted by this, and this is a huge hardship on these businesses that employ people and sometimes have started a dream business. These are friends of mine, and it's very personal. So I want to tell you, I understand that uncertainty. We're going to do the best we can to answer the questions just as soon as we can. You had a question about my discussion with Bill Gates, Elon Musk, very productive discussions. Elon Musk has offered to help to see if in his supply chain there might be places to obtain some necessary medical equipment, particularly ventilators, which obviously we have a keen interest in. And he's been able to help another state or two, and he's indicated that he will try to help to see if there's a way to help for access to them. He also was very useful in thinking through our policies, and he and I very much share the view that the more we have a unified response to this as one nation, rather than 50 states competing for these products, would be very, very beneficial. For instance, even if we could share ventilators from state to state, and if we had federal guidance in that regard, it'd be very, very helpful. I'm hopeful that that will happen from the federal government so that we can have a more coordinated national response and put these assets where they can do the most good. So I really enjoyed talking with him. Bill Gates has been super in understanding the need for testing, and we had some ideas about how to maximize that. Together with the fund that he has funded for research, we're so lucky in Washington because we've had this research project for the flu and other viruses that now has morphed into providing some of the world's best research is going on because of Bill and Melinda's efforts and great researchers. So they've been very helpful. I talked to the Vice President this morning, and we talked about a couple of needs that I'm hopeful that he can be helpful with to increase some of the critical supplies we need, and he indicated he would try to see if he could be helpful in that regard. So I appreciated his call. We're having good communication with our federal partners. I've spoken to the director of FEMA, the undersecretary of health in the last two or three days, and those conversations will continue. We're very appreciative of the Army that's now in Washington, the 627th from Fort Carson, and the Army Corps of Engineers is very active right now. So we're having good communication with our federal partners. There are some things that we are very hopeful that are going to be in the offing because they are necessary. We still have critical needs in the surge capacity of our hospitals. We have critical needs for personal protective equipment. We have nurses and doctors right now who are struggling to get access to our personal protective equipment. And we are trying to build that supply chain not only through the federal government, and we have got masks and the like from the federal stockpile, but we are also pursuing our own system of ordering material anywhere we can find it in the world today. And we're being as aggressive as possible in that regard. And was there anything packed into your multi-part question?
Chief Millett actually had something to add to
that. Yeah, Chief, go ahead.
Hey, Governor. Over the last several weeks, we've been getting calls about people congregating in violation of the state mandate. The King County Police Chiefs and Sheriffs Association had a meeting last week, and we talked about our approach to how we're going to be managing and handling these situations. And before I get into that, I again want to echo the governor's comments about please don't call 911. 911 is an emergency center, emergency lines, and we need to keep those lines open for the I need you here now calls, the emergencies. That being said, in King County, and I'm sure it's throughout the state, our posture is this. When we receive this information, our role is to inform and educate. We inform people that gathering together is actually placing themselves, their loved ones, in harm's way. And then we're educating and bringing to their attention that that particular gathering is actually a violation of law. We're not arresting people. We're not citing people. We're not detaining people. Our posture, our role at this time, anyway, is to inform and educate. And as much as you possibly can, please don't report these incidents on the 911 lines. So thank you for letting me add that, Governor.
Thanks, Chief. Glad you're on the call.
Next, we're going to go to Essex.
You're listening to an Olympia Coronavirus Task Force press conference with Governor Jay Inslee. There's one going on at the White House as well with the president and the federal task force. We're monitoring that, but we're going to stay with the local story as we continue to bring you this live here on the Dory Monson Show in 97.3 Cairo FM.
After all this time.
Well, everybody in the United States today, every governor, Republican, and Democrat has a shortage of personal protective equipment. It is a problem we all share, every citizen shares across the country. So that is not unique to us. We actually have had hundreds of thousands of shipments from the federal stockpile to our state that are today throughout our system of our hospitals. So we have received assistance from the federal government. There are some things that that we are very hopeful that the federal government can help us with, and I talked to the vice president about a couple of those things today, and I'm very hopeful that they can improve. What I can tell you that I think we have good open communications, as indicative that I talked to the vice president today and had a professional and discussion. So that's good. But look, we're going to need a lot more help from the federal government before we're out of the woods. And I've made that very, very clear to the vice president. And there's good evidence to back that up. So it is appropriate for us to make sure that we let our federal partners know what's needed. And it is needed here. And again, I'll just come back to this issue. One of the repeating questions is, when are we going to be able to, you know, have the end of this game? And again, I would point out, we cannot say, because we want to make decisions based on data. And some of the data that the federal government was working on is a little bit antiquated, because now we've had, as I've said, sort of a spike in positive tests in a variety of places in our state. That's going to up, or should up, the commitment of the federal government to help us on hospital beds, on ventilators, and a host of other medical equipment. So we make sure that they know about that on a daily basis, and that's one of the things I talked to the Vice President Pence about. One other comment, if I can. One of the really hard things about this disease is you don't know what it's going to do to you until 2 weeks after you either took a good action or you took a bad action. And so we're always, the results are 2 weeks before we really know what, or after we take an action. And what we're seeing is, in some of the areas in the state that have not had many fatalities yet, people have just not seen the mortality associated with this enough to really be committed to follow this order, frankly, and hunker down. So we're seeing some more compliance in the central Puget County core area, where people have seen their neighbors die. In some other places in the state, they haven't really seen a lot of that yet, but it is coming. It is coming, and people need to understand that. What has happened at Evergreen Hospital in Seattle is coming to the Tri-Cities, in Moses Lake, in Port Angeles, in Vancouver, and it's already there. So, again, it's why we're here today, to encourage people to be uniform and being part of this team so we can get through this together.
Thank you, Governor. In Spokane, they were told today that there were only 3,000 test kits available across the state as of state kits, not the commercial ones. Is that still the case? And if so, when can we expect that to change? And since we have Chief Meidel on the phone, I'm wondering if he could detail what sorts of gatherings or businesses his officers have been in contact with, trying to get them to comply with the order.
Chief, you want to answer that?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you very much, Governor. So, I'm not going to go into specific details about which businesses, but I will say that we have set up a website as well as a phone number here locally for folks who want to call in and complain about a business that is open and should not be. It's not an essential business. We also are asking our community to use this same website, which you can find on our website, as well as a phone number to forward those complaints. Make sure that you need crime checking 911 open as well. We do have a format in place. We're working with regional health district on those businesses that are violating. Again, our first priority is education. We don't want to have to go the enforcement route. If we do find ourselves having to go that direction, we're going to work closely hand in hand with regional health district on that process as well.
On the test kits, good news and bad news. The good news is that we have, because we have been as aggressive as possible in first standing up the Washington State Crime Lab that has tripled its production of being able to analyze these tests, because we're lucky to have the University of Washington capability, which has tripled or gone up by a factor of five or six, we've been able to have the probably about the second highest testing in the United States per capita the last time I checked. That's the good news. The bad news is we are way, way, way short in our testing capability, as is every state in the United States. And so we have been working on two parts of this. One, what you might call the back end, which is the ability for the laboratory to take the sample and test it. That is going up dramatically. We're in the 5,000 or 6,000 range, I think, of tests today now. I'll have to get you the number. Yeah, we're in about the 5,000 or 6,000 tests a day range. That's gone up by a figure of, you know, probably 20 since a month ago. So we've been quite successful building the analysis part. But now we've got a choke point on the test kits themselves. That's the swab and the vial medium that you have to preserve the test in, and plastic bags to send it to the lab. And we do not have that equipment. And it is so dire that our State Department of Health had a fellow drive from Seattle to Spokane last week, I think it's Friday night, to pick up 40 test kits and deliver them to Yakima, where there's an outbreak. That's how both dire and dedicated we are to try to solve this problem. So the way to solve this problem is twofold. Number one, manufacture, to the extent humanly possible, this material that we use in the kit. And frankly, this is one of the places where the federal government could really, really help out. And you may have heard me talk about this before, but it's so important. I want to reiterate it. We need a federal mobilization of the manufacturing capability of the United States to make these test kits. And we certainly have that capability, but we have not mobilized the companies that have the ability to do this yet. This could really use a federal leadership to get this job done, so that any place in the United States where there's a company that can make these test kits should be making those test kits today. Now, the federal government, through an order of the president, has the ability to require that. Following my urging that the president do that last week, the next day he did that for ventilators. And that was a good decision. We were gratified by that decision. And now a Bothell company, Ventec, is now going to make these with General Motors. They were probably going to do it anyway in this particular case. But we need a federal mobilization to make these test kits and to make masks and to make gowns and to make visors. And we can really use that. Now, we're not waiting. We're doing this in our own state. I talked to Dan Nordstrom, who's the CEO of Outdoor Research. They now are going to start making masks and gowns in the 100,000 per day area region. Our prison industries are now making surgical gowns and the like. But we have yet at the moment to have found a local manufacturer to make these test kits. And we're going to work doggedly. I met this morning with my team at the Department of Commerce and our emergency command center that are working to try to find local manufacturers. Now, the other good news, as you know, is that there has been approved an on-site testing system so that you can take this kind of box equipment to a site like a nursing home and collect those samples and get answers of positive or negative. Something like 45 minutes. That technology is coming on, and the Vice President in a call today indicated that those are coming to our state fairly shortly, at least some of these.
We have time for two more questions. We're going to go to Megan Carroll with Crown.
Hi, Governor Inslee. We have heard some rumors over here in Spokane that it's possible that we could be getting a field hospital of sorts as our cases increase in the area. I saw today that, but has the state been looking at any sites in Spokane as the number of positive tests increases in Eastern Washington?
I don't know the answer to that. I'll try to get you any information I can. I know the Army Corps of Engineers has been looking at several sites. I think, to my knowledge, those are on the west side at the moment. I don't know if they're looking at sites today in the Spokane area or not. I'll try to get you information I can in this regard. Listen, we think over time our hospital system is going to be stretched all across the state of Washington. Because that wave right now is closest to the Puget Sound Core, but it's headed to Spokane. It's headed to Walla Walla. And so we want to be prepared for the expansion of our hospital system. It's one of the reasons why I ordered elective surgery to be shut down so that we could stockpile personal protection equipment in Spokane so it will be ready when the wave hits Spokane. It's why we're looking for ways to get additional beds that can be distributed across the state. And we have, I think it's 1,200 beds that have already been delivered, the actual beds themselves. And our hospitals can increase their capacity. It's why we've been very aggressive in moving patients who really don't need to be in a hospital into other care settings that can be healthy for them and free up space in the hospital. We've moved about 380 of those patients. So we believe there's going to be a need for surge capacity in every region of the state of Washington. And so we're planning for every region of the state of Washington to have that surge capacity as much as humanly possible.
To Jay Inslee's press conference, we brought that to you for the last 45 minutes here on Cairo. I feel like I'm hosting NFL Red Zone today because Inslee's press conference is going on at the same time as President Trump's. But we've been prioritizing local for the last 45 minutes. Let me quickly, and the president is just about to start taking questions, so we'll take you to the White House so you can get some of that as well. But there's some pretty significant news coming out of the governor's press conference today. He said that they're going to have three tiers if you want to report somebody who is not abiding by the stay home, stay healthy ordinance. Tier one is you report them, and then somebody, some public official, will contact them and tell them they're in violation. Tier two, they would write a ticket, a citation. And then tier three, they said that the courts would get involved and they could file either civil or criminal charges against violators. Now, long after he talked about those three tiers, Governor Inslee said something that I think we're all going to be curious to see what's ahead for all of us. He said there will be some further measures to stay home, stay healthy, meaning there's going to be some higher level of enforcement, to be sure. Then he cited the reason that they need this stepped up level of enforcement is because, he said, well, some areas have been doing pretty well, and King County has had a flatter curve than certainly New York City and other parts of the country. But he said some other counties, Skagit, Adams, Island, that their curve is dramatically going up. And he said that that's very alarming, and that's why they're going to have greatly stepped up enforcement against all of us throughout the state. Now, as he was saying that, I was checking our text messages, and I heard from an emergency room physician who said that their reporting criteria has dramatically changed in the last week. And he said it would be impossible for the number of cases to not have gone up because some of the protocols, some of the criteria has changed that makes it a much lower threshold for who they report as having tested positive. So, and he said we have to be very careful about giving government this kind of power over our lives when they cite data that may not be apples to apples. And specifically, Governor Inslee did say that our state is using data, the federal government is using antiquated methods. And the emergency room physician or the emergency physician who contacted me said they've just changed the threshold for what is reported in our state. So he advised me, and I will look into that. He said to be wary of that. The president is now, and I will say, I think it's very disappointing because there is so much interest in the president. There's so much interest in what's going on here locally. It's very disappointing to me that the governor's press conference was at the same time as the federal coronavirus task force. Before I take you back to the White House live for some Q&A, there have been a couple of crazy moments. They moved the briefing outside, and it is a gusty afternoon in D.C. And I will say, the gusts have been wreaking havoc on the president's hair at times. But then, here is the craziest thing. I told you we'd monitor and bring you anything you missed. Mike Lindell is the owner of, you know, MyPillow.com. He invited Mike Lindell and several other corporate CEOs to speak in the last 20-30 minutes. And Mike Lindell apparently shocked even President Trump with what he talked about at the coronavirus task force briefing.
I'm proud to manufacture our products in the United States, and I'm even more proud to be able to serve our nation in this great time of need. Thank you, Mr. President, for your call to action, which has empowered companies like MyPillow to help our nation win this invisible war. Now, I wrote something off the cuff, if I can read this. Okay. God gave us grace on November 8, 2016, to change the course we were on. God had been taken out of our schools and lives. A nation had turned its back on God. And I encourage you to use this time at home to get back in the Word, read our Bibles, and spend time with our families. Our president gave us so much hope, where just a few short months ago, we had the best economy, the lowest unemployment, and wages going up. It was amazing. With our great president, vice president, and this administration, and all the great people in this country praying daily, we will get through this and get back to a place that's stronger and safer than ever.
Please come on up. I did not know he was going to do that, but he's a friend of mine, and I do appreciate it. Thank you, Mike, very much. Please.
So at the coronavirus task force, the MyPillow guy said, we got to use this time to get back to God. All right. You've been hearing from Jay Inslee and the Olympia press conference for 45 minutes live. The president has just started taking questions from the press. We want to cover that as well. And let's take you to Washington, D.C. and the White House here on The Dory Monson Show in 97.3 Cairo FM.
With the governors, I just wish you could, because we took a lot of calls from a lot of different states, and I wish you could have heard. Even a thing where, like, the governor of Ohio calls, where he has a company that does the sterilization, but they have a problem because it's not going quickly at the FDA. And I call up Steve, and Steve comes in, and he said, we'll get it done. And they checked it, and they got it done almost immediately. And originally, they were approving it for 10,000 masks. And then it was supposed to be for 80, and they ultimately approved it for 120,000. I mean, it's a tremendous number. And I kept wondering, why aren't they sterilizing these masks? I assume maybe you couldn't do it. But then I'd look at them, and they'd look like, you know, it's not cloth. It's something that looks like it could be sterilized, and that's what they've done. And that's the machine that is over there, actually. They have a piece of the machine over there. I won't bother showing it to you. And this is incredible when you talk about 5 minutes, 15 minutes, and highly accurate, and not nearly as disturbing to do as the other tests. So we've just gotten better. We're doing things that nobody else ever thought of. Please.
The DMV has issued stay-at-home orders, but Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia took it pretty far. He issued a 70-day stay-at-home order. Is that constitutional, first off? And secondly, do you think it's warranted to go ahead and issue a 70-day guidance at this point?
Well, we're letting the governors do in their states pretty much what they want with our supervision, and they consult with us in all cases. Some go further than others, as you know. I mean, I could give you plenty of examples, but I'm not going to do that because we never want to be controversial. But some of the governors have taken it a step further, and people are questioning that. But look, staying at home, with respect to what we're talking about, doesn't bother me at all. People should be staying at home. That's what we want. OAN, please. OAN.
2,405 Americans have died from coronavirus in the last 60 days.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have 2,369 children who are killed by their mothers through elective abortions each day. That's 16,500 children killed every week.
Yeah.
Two states have suspended elective abortion to make more resources available for coronavirus cases. That's Texas and Ohio. Do you agree with states who are placing coronavirus victims above elective abortions, and should more states be doing the same?
Well, I think what we're doing is we're trying to, as a group, governors, and that's Republicans and Democrats, we're just working together to solve this problem. That's been what you're mentioning has been going on for a long time, and it's a sad event, a lot of sad events in this country. But what we're doing is now we're working on the virus. We're working on that hidden enemy. And I think we're doing a great job on as good a job as you could possibly do. When Tony and Deborah came up with numbers yesterday to say that if we did nothing, you could lose 2.2 up to 2.2, maybe beyond. I don't know, maybe beyond, but 2.2 million people if we did nothing. And I can't tell you what the unfortunate final toll is going to be, but it's going to be a very small fraction of that. So we're doing an awfully good job, I think, with what we're doing. Please, go ahead. Please.
Are you considering at all a nationwide stay-at-home order? I know there's a lot of states that have put them in place, but some haven't. I'm just wondering if you were considering some sort of broad stay-at-home order. And then I have a question for Dr. Birx, too, yeah, if you don't mind.
Well, we've talked about it. We, there are some parts of the country that are in far deeper trouble than others. There are other parts that, frankly, are not in trouble at all. So hopefully we're going to be able to keep it that way by doing what we're doing. So we talked about quarantine, as you know. The other day, a group came to me and they wanted to do the quarantine. And I said, let's think about it. And we did, and we studied it. And by the time the evening came, it just was something that was very unwieldy, very tough to enforce, and something we didn't want to do. But we did advisory, and I think that's doing well. I mean, I look at the streets. You look at New York where there's – I looked down Fifth Avenue today. They were showing a shot of Fifth Avenue and sort of primetime, and there was almost nobody on Fifth Avenue. I've never seen that before. There was no car. There was no anything. So I think the people of this country have done an incredible job. If we do that, we will let you know. But it's pretty unlikely, I would think, at this time.
Can I ask a quick question for Dr. Birx?
Yes.
Also, so Dr. Birx, if you don't mind, you had mentioned today that this model that predicts 100,000 deaths is if we do things almost perfectly. So I wanted to know, are we currently doing things almost perfectly, or are there more things we need to be doing to cap, to not exceed that 100,000, 200,000 model?
Please, come.
Thank you. I think that's a really great question. And tomorrow we'll go through all of the graphs and all the information that we took to the president for the decision. But when you, and I just want to thank the data team that's working day and night to get, I mean, I usually get my data about 2 a.m. from them, and they assimilate all the data from all the states. And when you look at all of the states together, all of them are moving in exactly the same curves. And so that's why we really believe this needs to be federal guidance, so that every state understands that it may look like two cases today that become 20, that become 200, that become 2,000. And that's what we're trying to prevent. And I think states still have that opportunity, but they're going to have to do all of these these recommendations are recommendations that the globe is using. And so we really do recommend that every governor, every mayor looks very carefully and ensures that their communities are utilizing these guidance.
Thank you very much. Thanks. It is amazing. You look at Louisiana, and for a long time it was just staying at nothing. And then all of a sudden I look one day and I see a lot and a lot and a lot, and then it explodes. And now we're working very carefully and very powerfully with them. We're building hospitals, so we're building a lot of different things for Louisiana. So it's very important. Yeah, please, go ahead.
Mr. President, Dr. Fauci has warned that this could be seasonal, cyclical virus. So, and maybe both of you could comment on this, and Dr. Birx as well. Are you prepared for this to strike again, say, in the fall? All the efforts that are taking place right now to contain this, to be proactive,
We're prepared. I hope it doesn't happen. Doctor, would you like to say something about that? I hope it doesn't happen, but we're certainly prepared.
In fact, I would anticipate that that would actually happen because of the degree of transmissibility. However, if you come back in the fall, it will be a totally different ballgame of what happened when we first got hit with it in the beginning of this year. There will be several things that will be different. Our ability to go out and be able to test, identify, isolate, and contact trace will be orders of magnitude better than what it was just a couple of months ago. In addition, we have a number of clinical trials that are looking at a variety of therapeutic interventions, We hope one or more of them will be available. And importantly, as I mentioned to you many times at these briefings, is that we have a vaccine that's on track and multiple other candidates. So I would anticipate that, you know, a year to a year and a half, we'd be able to do it under an emergency use. If we start seeing an efficacy signal, we may be able to even use a vaccine at the next season. So things are going to be very, very different. What we're going through now is going to be more than just lessons learned. It's going to be things that we have available to us that we did not have before.
You are listening to the White House Coronavirus Task Force briefing daily here on KIRO FM, Tacoma, Seattle. That's going to do it for me. Tom and Curly are going to pick it up right after this briefing is over. I'll see you back here tomorrow at high noon. Back to Washington, D.C. in the White House. We go. Take care.
Thinks is a good idea.
Well, we haven't discussed it to that extent, but it's certainly something we could discuss. We're getting certainly the number of masks that you need. We are in the process of talking about things. I saw his suggestion on that. So we'll take a look at it. For a period of time, not forever. I mean, you know, we want our country back. We're not going to be wearing masks forever, but it could be for a short period of time after we get back into gear. I could see something like that happening for a period of time. But I would hope it would be a very limited period of time. Doctors, they'll come back and say for the rest of our lives we have to wear masks.
The roadmap also talks about doing GPS for social distancing, maybe following people's phones, and hotels for isolation for people, giving them free hotel rooms. Are those ideas that you're looking at?
Well, the GPS, that's a very severe idea. I've been hearing about it, GPS. So what happens? A siren goes off if you get too close to somebody? That's pretty severe. But he's somebody, he was with me for a long time. They did a great job at FDA. So we're taking a look. I just received it a little while ago. He sent it over. So very good. Go ahead. Let's give it a shot.
What do you say to Americans who are upset with you over the way you downplayed this crisis over the last couple of months? We have it very much under control in this country. The coronavirus is very much under control in the USA. It's going to disappear. It's like a miracle. It will disappear. March 4th, we have a very small number of people in this country infected. March 10th, we're prepared. We're doing a great job with it. It will go away. Just stay calm. It will go away. What do you say to Americans who believe that you got this wrong?
And I do want them to stay calm. And we are doing a great job. If you look at those individual statements, they're all true. Stay calm. It will go away. You know it is going away. And it will go away. And we're going to have a great victory. And it's people like you and CNN that say things like that, that it's why people just don't want to listen to CNN anymore. You could ask a normal question. The statements I made are, I want to keep the country calm. I don't want panic in the country. I could cause panic much better than even you. I could do much. I would make you look like a minor league player. But you know what? I don't want to do that. I want to have our country be calm and strong and fight and win. And it will go away. And it is incredible, the job that all of these people are doing, putting them all together, the job that they're doing. I am very proud of the job they're doing, that Mike Pence is doing, that the task force has done, that Honeywell and Procter and Gamble and Mike and all of these people have done. I'm very proud. It's almost a miracle, and it is, the way it's all come together. And instead of asking a nasty, snarky question like that, you should ask a real question. And other than that, I'm going to go to somebody else. Please, go ahead, please.
You expressed some concern in the past that medical supplies were going out the back door and that perhaps some hospitals were doing things worse.
Well, expressed what was told to me by a tremendous power in the business. He said that at a New York hospital for a long period of time, he was giving 10,000, maybe maximum 20,000 masks over a short time. And all of a sudden, he's giving 300,000. And I said, no matter how bad this is, could that be possible? He said, no. So there's only a couple of things that could happen. Is it going out the back door? And I've reported it to the city and let the city take a look at it. But when you go from 10,000 masks to 300,000 masks, Mike, over the same period of time, there's something going on. Now, I'm not making any charges. But when everyone's looking for masks, and by the way, that's another thing, we're making a lot of masks, and the sterilization process is going to save a lot of time and a lot of masks. But when you have the biggest distributor of product that distributes to many of the big hospitals and hospital chains, and he brings up a statistic like that, and I know you're trying to make a big deal out of it, but you shouldn't be. You should actually go over to the hospital and find out why. You shouldn't be asking me. I'm just saying that's the way it is. You should go over there as a great reporter. I have no idea who you are, but that's okay. You should go over there, go to the hospital, and find out how come you used to get 10,000 masks and you had a full hospital, New York City, always full. And how come now you have 300,000 masks, despite the virus and all, you have three? How do you go from 10 to 300,000? And this is very serious stuff. I mean, I could see from 10 to 20 or from 10 to 40 or 50 or something. But how do you go from 10 to 300,000 masks? So what I think you should do is I'm sure you're a wonderful investigative reporter. You should go to the hospital and find out why. Okay, yeah.
Are you asking your DOJ to look into it, sir?
Steve, please. Well, it's so bad for the economy, but the economy is number two on my list. First, I want to save a lot of lives. We're going to get the economy back. I think the economy is going to come back very fast. Steve's just asking about the economy. What's it like? We basically shut down our country. And we did that in order to keep people separated, keep people apart. They're not working in offices. They're not in airplanes together. You know, we really shut it down. And, you know, 150, 151 other countries are pretty much shut down. But here we had the greatest economy in the world. We had the greatest economy in the history of our country. And I had to go from doing a great job for 3 years to shutting it down. But you know what? We're going to build it up, and we're going to build it up rapidly. And I think in the end we'll be stronger for it. We learned a lot. We learned a lot. And I have to say we've had great relationships with a lot of countries. China sent us some stuff, which was terrific. Russia sent us a very, very large plane load of things, medical equipment, which was very nice. Other countries sent us things that I was very surprised at, very happily surprised. We learned a lot. We're learning a lot. And we're also learning that the concept of borders is very important, Steve. It's very important. Having borders is very, very important. But we have done an incredible job. The economy is going to come back. My focus is saving lives. That's the only focus I can have. We're going to bring the economy back, and we'll bring it back fast. Yeah, please.
Follow up.
Go ahead. Oh.
Mr. President.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. President. You've said several times that the United States has ramped up testing. So let's talk a little quicker or a little louder. Mr. President, you said several times that the United States has ramped up testing, but the United States is still not testing per capita as many people as other countries like South Korea. Why is that, and when do you think that that number will be on par with other countries?
Yeah, well, it's very much on par. Per capita, we have areas of country that's very wide. I know South Korea better than anybody. It's a very tight. Do you know how many people are in Seoul? Do you know how big the city of Seoul is? 38 million people. That's bigger than anything we have. 38 million people all tightly wound together. We have vast farmlands. We have vast areas where they don't have much of a problem. In some cases, they have no problem whatsoever. We have done more tests. I didn't talk about per capita. We have done more tests by far than any country in the world, by far. Our testing is also better than any country in the world. And when you look at that, as simple as that looks, that's something that's a game changer. And every country wants that, every country. So rather than asking a question like that, you should congratulate the people that have done this testing, because this administration inherited a broken system, a system that was obsolete, a system that didn't work. It was okay for a tiny, small group of people, but once you got beyond that, it didn't work. We have built an incredible system to the fact where we have now done more tests than any other country in the world, and now the technology is really booming. I just spoke to, I spoke to a lot. I'm not going to even mention. I spoke to a number of different testing companies today, and the job that they've done and the job that they're doing is incredible. But when Abbott comes out and does this so quickly, it's really unreal. In fact, one company, I have to say, that stands out in the job, and I think I can say this, I don't want to insult anybody else, but Roche. Roche has been incredible. in the testing job they've done, and they're ramping it up exponentially. It's up, 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 up. And you should be saying congratulations instead of asking a really snarky question, because I know exactly what you mean by that. You should be saying congratulations to the men and women who have done this job, who have inherited a broken testing system and who have made it great. And if you don't say it, I'll say it. I want to congratulate all of the people. You have done a fantastic job, and we will see you all tomorrow. Thank you very much. Thank you.